you take naps? Are you a napper? A regular old Rip Van Winkle? Some of you, don't get confused, that's not Robert Matthew Van Winkle, the American entertainer who knows how to stop, collaborate, and listen. No, completely different Van Winkle we're talking about. Rip Van Winkle is 205 years old. Well, he's not actually 205 years old, but his story is 205 years old. Some of us go, well, everybody knows who Rip Van Winkle is. I don't know. I don't know if anybody reads about Rip Van Winkle anymore. I mean, it was always in those little books when we were kids, but maybe they're not in the little books anymore. So, just for the sake of conversation, I thought we'd talk about Rip for a second. The first time the story of Rip Van Winkle was published was in 1819 by Washington Irving. That's known as one of the first true American short stories. It's based on a German folk tale from many years ago. And it tells the story of Rip. Rip was a friendly farmer who wandered into the forest and the mountains, met some strangers. They gave him something that was a little stronger than a watermelon Capri Sun. And after he had had some, he decided to sit down and take a nap. So after Rip had the ripple, he really slept for a long time. As the tale goes, if you know it, he woke up 20 years later. That's a long nap. I mean, can you imagine what would happen if you took a nap for 20 years? Can you imagine what would change in the world and what would change in your life? And I know some of you nappers are going, that sounds really good. I want to try it. Yeah, 20-year nap. I think I'm going to start today. But all this napping, it begs a nagging question. If a child refuses to take a nap, are they resisting arrest? What if there was something much deeper on the level of guilt than just resisting arrest? What if there was something that wouldn't just change the next 20 years of your life if you napped on it, but something that actually would change your life 10,000 years from now? That sounds silly. It's not. What if there were something, a level, a connection of guilt that would impact your life 10,000 years from now? What in the world would have that kind of power? We continue our series Above All, where we are engaging with a moment in the life of a prophet named Isaiah. And this moment for Isaiah was not a napping moment. He was wide awake, and something mesmerizing and incredible was happening in his life. He experienced something that no other human has experienced, and it changed how he thought, it changed how he spoke, it changed the confidence he had in his life. And so what did he see? What happened? Let's see if we can find out together. Our message today is Above All Guilt. We're going to be looking in the Old Testament in the Bible at Isaiah chapter 6, verse 5. And this is what Isaiah says. Then I said, woe to me, for I am ruined. Now, why did Isaiah say that? Well, 739 years before Jesus was born, Isaiah had a moment. He had a moment where he had a supernatural vision of God. He was able to catch a glimpse of the one true sovereign God. God allowed him to see just a glimpse of his majesty and his glory, his power. And what Isaiah saw was the only one who was and is to come. God alone is the one true God, and there is no one like him. He has no beginning. He has no end. He has always been. He will always be. There is no God like that. And what kind of God did Isaiah see? Well, back in the first part of his vision in verses 1 through 4, Isaiah details that what he saw was God, high and lofty, sitting on the throne above all thrones. And the train of his royal robe filled up the whole high court, the whole high temple of where God's throne was. In other words, that type of fullness in that room, in that court, on that throne, means that there is, never has been, never will be any other king or queen or president or presidential candidate or billionaire businessman or news media influencer or social media influencer. There is no one at no time in past, present, future history that ever compares to God. There is absolutely no one like the God of the Bible. He stands alone. So be of good cheer if that God is your God. Be of good cheer if you are a follower of His Son, Jesus the King. Because the kingdom of God is the one and only kingdom that is forever. There is no end to His kingdom. Above this awe-inspiring throne that Isaiah saw, he also saw some angelic beings known as seraphim. And they were bright and radiant, like flaming with light, fiery. And back and forth and back and forth, they kept saying the same thing over and over again. It's the same thing they are saying right now, even as we gather together. And what they were saying was this: holy, holy, holy is the Lord of armies. The earth, the whole earth, is full of His glory. There is no athlete, there is no entertainer, there is no person of any fame or fortune whose glory fills the earth. It's not possible. There's always a desert village somewhere. There's always a jungle hut where there's someone who has not heard of that politician's name, that athlete's name, that entertainer's name. But not so with the one true God. Every village, every hut, every cloud, every spot on earth, every single human heart is aware of the fullness of the glory of God. Even the person who doesn't believe in God, their heart is full and understanding of the glory of God. It is how we have been created. C.S. Lewis put it this way: if I find in myself a desire which no experience in this world can satisfy, the most probable explanation is that I was made for another world. So even if we fight against it and we say, well, I don't believe in God. This is happening in my life and I don't want to believe in a God that would allow this to happen, or I'm struggling in this moment, or I've never believed in God. No matter what, we all have this understanding that there is a satisfaction, a desire we have that cannot be filled by anyone or anything in this world. And Lewis says, when you get to that moment, what your heart is telling you is what you were created with, and what you were created with is an understanding that through the glory of God, it fills the earth and it even fills our heart, even as we fight against it. Lewis said, we were made for another world. That other world, that's the world that Isaiah is catching a vision of. He's catching a vision of this other world. And as he caught a glimpse of that, he spoke, he responded. And what did he say? Again, verse 5, then I said, woe to me, for I am ruined. In a moment where many of us would say, oh, this is terrific, he's saying, this is terrifying. He was overwhelmed with fear. Why? Because he was catching a glimpse of the only God who is holy, holy, holy. This wasn't a selfie moment for Isaiah. It was a self-awareness moment. It was a moment where he began to look at his own heart and his own mind, because he was confronted with the weight of glory. There's an old saying that the hardest part is not getting people saved, but it's getting people lost. In other words, people have a really hard time believing that they're lost. Many people will be saved. I mean, many people will respond and pray a prayer that they think is going to help them feel like they're going to get into heaven. That sounds good. But the challenge is to have people really understand and agree with the fact that they have been lost, that they are lost. We seem to live in a world today where no one's guilty of anything. There's no guilt of sin. There's no lostness. There's no separation from God. It's just we're a product of our home life. We're just a product of our environment. We're just a product of, you know, the foods we ate. And all those things can have their place and doesn't minimize any of them. But we seem to live in a time where there's no understanding, no concept that we are actually guilty of defying God, that we're guilty sometimes of doing the wrong thing. When Isaiah was confronted with a vision of God, he immediately felt ruin. He felt anguish. He felt grief. He felt guilt. He felt terror. Stephen Lawson said this, "Whenever people in the Bible came close to the holiness of God, they shook like a leaf in a storm." Why? Why did they shake like that? Why was there a trembling? Because they were in the presence of the only God who is holy, holy, holy. Many years ago, a friend of mine had the opportunity to be in a private interview with the Pope. And I'll never forget him describing all the ins and outs of that moment, the safety, the security, and the sacredness of the moment. He said it was pretty overwhelming. And maybe you've had a moment kind of like that where you met someone who's famous, someone who has fame and fortune, and there was that sense of security and safety, this sensational moment of meeting someone who's important or well-known. But no matter who we may meet in this world, no matter how great and good they may be, there is no human being who is holy, holy, holy. Only God and God alone. There is no one like him. To be in the presence of God in the way that we see people in the Bible in the presence of God means that we are brought low. There is a sense of humility. So have you ever been brought low like that? Have you ever experienced this moment that Isaiah had, a sense of this moment that he had, and you were brought low before God? Your heart was humbled before God. Or maybe let me ask it a different way. Have you ever had a moment where you really understood that you had gotten lost? That you were lost, that you were guilty, that you were separated from all that is good and holy and happy? Have you truly gotten lost and gotten saved? Or did you just shake the preacher's hand and get baptized? Have you felt the weight of glory? Have you felt the weight of guilt? Have you felt the weight of sin? Have you felt the weight of salvation? Have you felt the weight, the glorious weight of what the choir sang, that the verdict now is not guilty? Have you felt that? Simon Kistermacher said this, "When one is confronted with Jesus, it is impossible to remain neutral. His enemies react to his miracles with hatred and reviling, his true disciples with homage and reverence. They stoop and worship." Have you truly stooped and worshiped? Have you experienced this sense of awe? Or when it comes to religion, when it comes to coming before God, when it comes to church, you don't like that idea of holiness. You don't like the idea of being low. You don't like the idea of having to be humble. You're more 80s hair band. Hey, don't want nothing but a good time. That's what I want at church, you know? Let's just do that. Unfortunately, the holiness of God calls us in a different direction. And this response from Isaiah, it's reasonable, it's rational, and it's really helpful for us even right now. How? Because it helps us see how we need to approach God. I was reading something just a few weeks ago about the danger that the modern church has in not having
an understanding of the holiness of God as we gather to worship. That we have lost that ability to be low, to be humble. It's just all hugging and shaking hands and talking about the game. And that's not evil, but we've lost that sense of holiness. I think I shared with you before the story of the church that was sharing their facility with a Korean church, a Korean-speaking church. And the pastor said that the beginning of their two services were very different because their service was first, and then the Korean church came in after their service. And he said while they were having their service, the members of the Korean-speaking church were lined up outside. They could not wait for their service to end so they could leave, and so they could come in 30 minutes early. And when they came in, they just sat, and they just prayed, and they were quiet. They were pursuing God. That's how they came in to worship. Isaiah, as he approached this holiness of God, as he caught a glimpse of the glory of God, he got low. And he did something else. Listen to verse 5. Because I am a man of unclean lips. See, the healthy thing that Isaiah does is he gives us this healthy sense of how we approach God. And we approach God understanding our guilt. Isaiah understood the guilt of his sin. He understood the guilt of sin in his life. And not just any sin, but notice he says the sin of his lips. It's the sin of his words. What have we said this week that we shouldn't have said? I mean, you don't have to say it out loud. It's all right, okay? But we've all done it, every single one of us. We've either said something we shouldn't have said, or we didn't say something that we should have said. We've all been there. So as Isaiah approaches the holiness of God, the first thing that happens to him is he is overwhelmed with the guilt of his own sin. His first reaction, hey, this is cool. His first reaction is, oh, he's holy and I'm not. Greg Moore said this, Isaiah unravels before the Holy One who knows him completely. God ain't confused. We can't hide from him. God knew him completely, every sin, every twisted motive, every secret deed. He throws the gavel down upon himself and immediately pleads guilty. Did he even know what sin was before this moment? This is a prophet of God who preached about sin, spoke about sin, dealt with sin, and yet when he was confronted with a glimpse of the sovereign holiness of God, it was as if he didn't even know what sin was. So he started confessing sin. When was the last time you confessed sin? When was the last time you apologized for something? Now, I'm not talking about apologizing after you got caught, okay? When was the last time that no one had to tell you that you were rude, that you were a bully, that you were mean, that you ignored them, that you did or said something just unkind? You caught it yourself and then went and apologized before anybody had to tell you. When was the last time we did that? When was the last time that you asked someone to forgive you? I mean, like you actually used those words. Please forgive me for blank. When was the last time? If you can't remember, or if your first thought is never, it might be helpful for you to ask God if you've ever truly stooped and worshiped. Have you ever truly gotten lost and gotten saved? Do you have saving faith in Jesus even right now in this moment? Isaiah sees God and he is immediately driven to confess sin. And not just his sin. Look at verse 5. And I live among a people of unclean lips. Look, I don't know if you know this or not, but the people that you go to church with and the people that you go to school with and the people you work with and the people at the hospital and the orphanage and the bingo parlor and the people at the State House and the White House and your house, the people that are debating on stage as presidential candidates, and the pastor preaching on the stage to you right now, all of them have unclean lips. Every single one of us have unclean lips. The Apostle Paul said it this way to the church at Rome: there is no righteous person, not even one. There's no one who understands. There's no one who seeks out God. They have all turned aside. Together they have become corrupt. There is no one who does good. There is not even one. Now, some women say, I don't like that part of the Bible, you know? Somebody might say, well, I don't believe in those types of verses because I think I'm pretty good. I think I'm all right. I think I'm a pretty nice person. I don't think I belong to a group of people of unclean lips. That's just not true. As one Robinsonian philosopher would say, you sure about that? I mean, are you sure about that? Years ago, theologians said that not even Adam and Eve were righteous. At best, they were innocent. So there's none righteous. And in the middle of all the political and social and financial turmoil that his country was in, not unlike what we experience today, in the middle of that moment, what Isaiah's doing, he's just stating the obvious. This is not radical. This is not revolutionary. This is not, you know, the first time it's ever been said. It is a rational, reasonable response to seeing God. Isaiah is saying, He is God, and I am not. He is holy, 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 and I am not. He is perfect, and I am not. He is glorious and everlasting, and I am sinful and unrighteous. And Isaiah knew, and we know, even if we fight against it, that if we're not right with God, we need to be right with God. And the only way we can be right with God is to get low and to cooperate with the quickening of His Spirit when the Holy Spirit helps us to see and hear and embrace and enjoy and love the grand and glorious news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And what is that news? What is the grand and glorious news of the gospel of Jesus Christ? It is very simply this: the Son of God, the King, the Messiah, Jesus of Nazareth, bore our sin and the penalty of our sin in His own body and made the way, the only way, for us to be saved, rescued, redeemed, and loved forever. The only way that the verdict is not guilty is through Jesus. Have you been lost? Have you truly gotten lost? And have you truly gotten saved? In the middle of a trembling, terrifying moment in his life, what Isaiah sees is sin. Not just his sin, but the sin of the whole nation. That might not be a bad idea for us as Christians to start thinking. Before we start thinking that, this country's going to hell, but I'm a Southern Baptist. This country's falling apart, but I have family values. That's probably the wrong way for us to approach the depth and breadth of the sin of the world. Looking at Isaiah is a pretty good, healthy way. God, I am a sinner and I live amongst a bunch of sinners. Lord, have mercy. Lord, be gracious. Lord, see us, know us, find us, rescue us. Isaiah also realized something else in that moment. Look at the last part of verse 5. For my eyes have seen the King, the Lord of armies. Isaiah was seeing something that he had no true concept of. He had it a little bit in his mind, but he could not actually understand what he was seeing, but he knew what he was seeing. He was seeing the King. Greg Morse goes on to say this, Isaiah's eyes see the Holy King of Israel, the God of armies, and he does not run to sit on his lap, but falls to his face, confessing the evil not only of his tongue, but of the tongues he lived among on earth. Here he did not lament that he dwelled among a people of sexual immorality, murder, or idolatry. What he said and what the people said, their conversations, horrified him before the righteous one. As he realized he was standing before the King, he was horrified at what he said. Have you ever said something just really terrible in a moment to someone else? And either you didn't know you said it, or you did know you said it, but one way or the other, it became pretty quick that you said it. And you remember that moment where you were just kind of horrified that you said that out loud. And look, I'll be honest, some of you say horrible things and you never care about it, you know? And some of us don't even say horrible things and we freak out about it, all right? We're all over the spectrum, okay? But most of us had that moment where we went, ooh, wish I could reel those words back in. Isaiah, in front of the King of all kings, his thought was, listen to how we talk. Listen to our conversations. Dear Christian, there's a good little challenge in there for us. What do our conversations sound like? What comes out of our mouths most of the time? Do we sound like people who have seen the King, the Lord of armies? Or are we afraid of who's going to be in office? Are we afraid of the price of gas? Are we afraid of something changing in our lives? Or are we confident? I love what David said earlier when he introduced our missions video. He said, the Lord is going to see it through. He's going to accomplish his work. It's going to happen. It is. No matter what happens tomorrow, the kingdom of God is forever. No matter what happens during the polls in November, the King of God is forever. His kingdom is forever. It never ends. And friends, this is our God. This is the God we've sung to. This is the God we heard the choir sing about. This is the God we've prayed to. Let us be confident in our God. Let our conversations sound like we are confident in our God. We're not going to be perfect. We're all going to have our moments. But wouldn't it be great if you're not known as the blowhard, dirty joke teller at the biscuit joint in the morning? Wouldn't it be great if you weren't known as the gossiping woman on the phone all week long about whatever's happening in the universe? Wouldn't it be great if as a believer and follower of Jesus, that we as young people, we would begin to say, look, we want people to know our God. We're not going to be obsessed with our favorite people on social media. Wouldn't it be great if Christians had conversations that sounded like our God is holy, holy, holy? Do you think anything would look and sound different? I was reading that quote that I just shared to Tammy Adams, our family life minister, I think last week or week before last, about how Isaiah does not run to sit on the lap of God. And Tammy goes, yeah, we may not curl up, but we'll probably crawl up. And that's good. We may not, like Rip Van Winkle, curl up in the lap of God when we see him and take a little nap. We might be crawling up because we've gotten low, because there is something about the weight of his glory that we know we want. And so we'll crawl to the throne. We will crawl to just catch a glimpse of the glory and power of God. Now, that doesn't mean that God is not a good, loving Father. It doesn't mean that He's mean and we have to crawl up. It just simply means that we understand who He is and who we are. And we know that He is the only one who can rescue and redeem and save us. What we know is that He is the only one who can rescue us beyond and before and behind and over and under and above all guilt. Only God. He's the only one that can rescue us above all guilt, because He is the only one who is above all guilt. Don't sleep on this reality, because this picture that we have of seeing the King reminds us every human being will see the King. Every human being, past, present, and future, will see the King. And so the question in that moment is, when we see the King, what will we hear? Because what we hear in that moment will matter 10,000 years from now. So will we know the King as our Redeemer? And will we hear the words, "Not guilty"? I pray that your heart knows that verdict is true.